are back. Welcome to No Direction Beyond, the Starfinder News, Reviews, and Interviews podcast. I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param, and joining me is...
Alexander Agunis, the Everyman Gamer.
And I'm James. I write Code Switch.
Excellent. And today we're going to be wrapping up our class feature series, at least until Starfinder releases some more classes for the game.
Wait, I thought we said last time that we were done with this. There's another class to do?
Well...
You tricked me, James!
No.
I didn't do it on purpose.
Well, it is fair. In this case, the class passed its stealth check, because we are here to talk about the operative.
For the past 3 weeks, we've been joking that this is our Berenstain Bear episode.
Yes, because we all distinctly remember recording an operative episode, but there is no evidence it exists.
We literally all went through the No Direction database like 3 times trying to find this episode that we all swore we did. And I kind of feel like it's that... When you talk about any type of skills-based class, you kind of bring it up in comparison to the operative, because like that is the operative's domain. And so anything that like the envoy or the mechanic do that is remotely skill-based gets measured up to the operative's abilities. So at least that's the assumption I'm going with, and not that like, you know, extraterrestrial life forms came down, stole the episode, and wiped everybody's minds of it, which is possible, but just highly, highly unlikely.
Yeah, more likely we're just dumb and forgot.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to say it like that, James, but okay.
Meh.
Now, what is so special about the operative? Well...
Everything. Episode done. Let's leave.
According to Starfinder, your shadow. You move swiftly, strike suddenly, and always have an escape plan. You're a consummate professional, and you always get the job done.
Oh, man, you don't want to tell that to 90% of operatives in PFS because they fail all over the place.
They fail, really. This has the reputation of being Starfinder's most OP class, and I'm not sure I disagree.
Those people have never played an operative.
Oh, all right. So let's go down the operative spine and then start getting into this class. They are a 6 hit point class with 6 plus constitution modifier stamina points. Their key ability score is Dexterity, Starfinder's Uberstat. They also recommend that you have high intelligence and charisma because it will benefit the skills that you have way too many of. The class skills for the operative are pretty much all of them. Acrobatics, athletics, bluff, computers, culture, disguise, engineering, intimidate, medicine, perception, piloting, profession, sense motive, sleight of hand, stealth, and survival. They have 8 plus intelligence modifier skill ranks per level, and they're proficient in light armor, basic melee weapons, small arms, and sniper weapons.
But they don't have any sciences as knowledges, so...
Yeah, those are literally the only skills on the list that they miss. They don't have life science, they don't have physical science, and they don't have mysticism. And I think that's it. Yeah, they have every other skill. They miss 3.
Right. And it's not hard to see them making up for that. They have a 2/3 BAB track, and they have good reflex and will saves.
Right. Poor, poor mechanic. You're the only one who's going to get dominated regularly.
I know. And actually, I do find the exception with it here, because the operative is supposed to be Starfinder's translation of the roguish type. And so they traditionally have bad will saves. So I'm really unsure why they decided that the operative should have its one weakness patched over.
Well, I personally think that, like, you know, the investigator and a couple other of like the rogue but not rogue classes also got good will saves, and I don't think any class in the game only gets one save unless they're a full spellcaster. So like they probably figured, hey man, we can't give the operative 6 levels of spellcasting. I guess we'll give them a will save bonus instead.
And because this is definitely the skillful class, when we start getting into the class features itself, they get one of the better class features right off the bat, which is Operative's Edge. They have a +1 insight bonus to initiative checks and skill checks, and that keeps going up every four levels. So actually at third, and then every four levels past that. So the operative will always be at the top or cutting edge of the skill progression.
It's actually interesting because if you compare it to every other class in the game that has a similar bonus like that, with the exception of the Envoy, the operative's bonus grows faster than every other. And the only reason the operative sometimes is ahead is that they roll a D6 and then eventually a D6 plus like one or two as their insight bonus instead. So the Envoy is really the only character in the game that gets as big of a bonus as quickly as the operative, and even then the operative is the only one that has any type of bonus on initiative checks.
Yeah, and the eventually they move up in dice, the envoy moves up in die size, and it's just an average increase, but you're still sometimes going to actually fail a skill check if you roll ones.
And yeah, it's a lot less consistent than the operative, I agree.
And the next ability they get is one of the defining abilities. This is where you pick your split for the class, like many classes, you have many different branches for them that you choose at level one. And for the operative, you pick your operative specialization, which will...
And the specialization is really cool because your operative specialization gives you two extra skill points, essentially, per level. They just have to be allocated to specific skills that each different operative specialization lays out. It basically means you're getting 10 plus your intelligence and skill ranks. So there isn't really a class in the game that can keep up with 10 plus in for skills. No. It's one of the big things that makes the operatives the overall just most versatile and generalist of skills. Just the fact they have like 16 class skills and they can have 10 plus their in of them right off the bat.
And to go down the list real quick, the operative specializations are Daredevil, which focuses on acrobatics and athletics. Detective, that focuses on culture and sense motive. Explorer, that focuses on culture and survival. The Ghost, which is acrobatics and stealth. The Hacker, which is computers and engineering. The Spy, which is bluff in disguise. And the Thief, which is perception and sleight of hand.
Each specialization also has a way to either use the next class feature we're going to talk about, the trick attack, with multiple skills, and we'll get in that in a minute. The only exception is the Ghost, who instead gets a slightly better bonus after erratas than all the other ones. Originally the Ghost got a +4 bonus to stealth checks to do trick attacks, which basically meant like they were the mathematically best option to go to land trick attacks, and so everyone was Ghost. But now that they've lowered it to just a +1 in an FAQ, it is significantly more balanced. You can pick other ones and still feel like you're good in contributing. Finish yours and I'll give mine.
And the reason they've done that is because if you look at the Daredevil, which also uses a dex-based skill acrobatics, it doesn't get the +4 bonus that Ghost did in the original printing. And it basically meant that you were relying on your best stat bonus with a huge bonus to make the checks. It was basically unbeatable.
Yeah. Well, because I think the original idea was that if you weren't using your key ability score, you weren't using your dex to make the check, then the thing gave you a pretty big bonus to make up for it. So that, you know, you didn't fit the field, like you had to completely shift all your skills around and be unlikely to hit. Because as we'll talk about, trick attack is, it's actually not super easy to get off, especially at low levels. Once you get to higher levels, mathematically, it becomes a guarantee rather than a maybe. But at low levels, it's tough. And when you look at Daredevil's acrobatics, you know, you get the ability to use acrobatics, but you don't get a bonus to it because it's already your key skill. The original idea probably was that Ghost was the only one that didn't have like one of those special sentences that modified how the specialization used their skills, because anybody can use stealth to make a trick attack. And so someone was probably like, hey, we'll just add the copy paste this +4 here. We got to get the book done. And it turned out to be super game breaking.
Yeah, it was also in the point where, like, in a lot of early published material, every operative was a Ghost specialization too.
Yeah. Oh, all of them were. So many. And I mean, the thing is that even without that +4 bonus, with it being dropped to a +1, it's still a really solid pick. Mostly because the other things that your specializations give you are a specialization exploit, which is essentially a 10th level exploit that you get at 5th level. You get it 5 levels early. Mm-hmm. And then you get a special 11th level power that is unique to your specialization. So overall, specializations are very cut down. And Ghost is really good. I'm sure we'll get into more detail about what each of these specializations do. But for the meantime, I personally think we should get through the class before we talk about like builds and stuff.
Okay. And the next ability is probably the most defining, or at least most iconic ability of the class, which is the Trick Attack.
Mm-hmm.
Trick Attack allows you, when you're using an operative weapon, to add damage dice if you succeed at you doing a skill check before you make the attack. So when you make a Trick Attack...
Sick flips!
Yes, sick flips, indeed. As a full action, you can move up to your speed, and whether you moved or not, you then make an attack with a melee weapon with the operative special property or with any small arm. Just before you make the attack, you make a bluff, intimidate, or stealth check, or one of your operative, one of your specialization skills that it allows to, against a DC equal to 20 plus your target CR. That starts out sounding really high, but you will scale past that fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. And if you succeed at that skill check, you get to add damage dice to the attack, and the target is considered flat-footed for the attack. This damage increases as the operative level up. It starts at a D4, goes up to D8 at level 3, and all the way up to 10D8 at level 19. So a significant damage boost.
It is. Mathematically, Trick Attack, if you pass the check, gives you a similar hit and damage ratio to about one hit from a soldier. Mm-hmm. Granted, because you're rolling so many D8s, you have a chance to burst and be a lot higher. But one of the things that I see people talking about operatives that a lot of people get wrong is this idea that they're super bursty like a rogue. And that just isn't true, because using a Trick Attack is a full action. Mm-hmm. And there is no ability that lets you make more than one attack as part of that Trick Attack. So you're only ever going to hit that specific damage threshold. And considering that you're using operative and or small arm weapons, they already have a naturally lower damage die compared to some of the things that like soldiers get. So in general, it's about the same as using the same weapon against like the same type, like a ranged or a melee, as like a soldier would get for like that one hit. But you basically have a full attack bonus because you're giving your enemy flat-footed, so you get to boost up that extra to hit. It's a very strong, fun ability, but I think that a lot of people don't really think about what its math looks like.
Right. Yeah, and also a lot of its better parts are the riders that you can put on it.
Oh, yeah.
There is also a school of thought that the operative is a problematic class for Starfinder, and one of the reasons is this ability, that because... Sorry, we just got to say that because... That's really weird. Okay, so that because... I'm very sorry, everyone. Something happened off screen that just like killed my brain. But because of the Trick Attack and how good it scales up damage, that the entirety of the small arms class of weapons is forever nerfed. And giving any sort of ability to make anything else good at small arms has to be carefully balanced to making sure the operative can never touch that ability, lest the operative become incredibly OP.
So that's partially true. mostly because if it's an ability that you can dip, and then just that dip is enough to offset for the more than the levels of operative you gave up getting that ability, then it's a problem. But if the ability is something that either equals the levels you gave up or doesn't equal the levels you gave up, then it should be fine, if that makes sense. Like, let's say that you make it a gear boost for a soldier, and a gear boost is a level 3 ability, meaning that an operative would need to go soldier 3 in order to get that power. If the theoretical gear boost was the equivalent of 3 levels worth of Trick Attack damage for a operative, so that would be like
a single,
I don't know, yeah, like a D8, maybe 2D8, depending on the levels. So somewhere between an average of 4.5 and 9 damage. Like, if it hit that ballpark, it would be balanced, and it would be fair for the operative, it would be fair for the soldier. If it gave more than that, about 4.5 to 9 damage range, then it would be way too powerful for the operative. Mm-hmm. It basically just comes down to the math and like when you're getting these powers and abilities. Especially like if you're a soldier dipping into operative, like it's just really not worth it because you're making one attack and you have to make a skill check, which you're bad at, in order to make your enemy flat-footed, which is a net plus one bonus over just going straight soldier because of how the three-fourths BAB work. I just really think it's more along the lines of making small arms and operative weapons good for soldiers isn't something that was necessary for the launch product, and the Starfinder schedule has not been great at expanding options for players. Right. And I'm hoping that, you know, maybe after the beginner's box, we'll see an advanced person's box, and then maybe we'll get some of these options. But for now, yeah, we kind of don't.
It's also the only class that has a weapon property named after them.
It is. It's like Monk in Pathfinder.
Huh.
Yeah. I'm personally of two minds of that. I feel like just calling it Finesse would have been a better legacy and also made more sense. But I can see the benefit for having an ability called Operative, so you could be like, oh, that has my name in it. I can use that. Like, there's something charming about that simplicity, too.
What we're saying is that the Operative had an incredible PR person on his side.
Yes. It was probably Rob McCreary, because Rob McCreary is a pretty awesome guy. He could probably talk a snake into buying anti-venom.
The next up is a power that any of our D20 fans are probably familiar with. At second level, the operative gets evasion!
Evasion! Hey, do we have to talk about this? It's basically the same as Pathfinder.
Well, we can't assume that any of our audience plays the Pathfinder game.
I guess that's true.
If you succeeded a reflex save that would normally have a partial effect on a successful save, you take none! You can gain this benefit only when you are unencumbered, wearing light armor or no armor, and you lose the benefit if you are helpless or otherwise unable to move. They don't are be caught really paralyzed, good y'all. At getting out the way.
Do you know what's really great? Because I don't know if it specifically called out helpless in Pathfinder, but because of the way that it's worded for helpless, and I'm sorry for cutting you off, James.
No, you're good.
But because of the way it's worded helpless, you know how like there's that weird thing where like if you're unconscious lying on the ground, you could still make a reflex save against fireball? Like evasion's like, no. You still get a reflex save, but no. No, I'm sorry, go ahead. What were you gonna say, James?
The way that this is worded also doesn't say anything about damage. It just says if there's a partial effect on a save. So this is more of a thing in Pathfinder, and I'd have to look through all the Starfinder spells. They just put some weird saves on certain spells to give spellcasters variety in their attacks. There's theoretically the ability to reflex out of a mind-affecting spell partial.
Also, like, if a grenade uses, like, a Tanglefoot bag, if success is you're glued to the floor and regular is you're entangled but you can still move, like, evasion wouldn't have protected you from that in Pathfinder because it wasn't damage. But this evasion, you would evade out of the Tanglefoot bag altogether. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right.
I just think it's a neat little way to word it. Really nice. You're right. It does have really nice wording compared to the original.
No. No. It's good. It's good. Speaking of things that are good, operative exploits. This is basically rogue talents for the operative.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything else in Starfinder, they are scaled at level. I believe that they are 2nd, 8th, 14th. That sound right? No, there's a 10th in there too.
2nd, 6th, and 10th.
Oh gosh, 14th. I'm so wrong, everybody. Yeah, 2nd, 6th, 8th, 14th. It's great. It's 2 in every 4 after. And the operative specializations the operative exploits are really good once you get past second level.
Yeah, it's 2 in every 2 after.
Yeah. I personally think, except for like combat trick and night vision and uncanny mobility, a lot of the second level ones are kind of meh. But like, there are some. Yeah, you don't think so? Which ones do you think are amazing, Paramount?
I like holographic clone.
I mean, it's a standard action once per day for 4 mirror images. I mean, I guess you can use it more as you level up, but
mirror images is one of the best defensive spells in any version of the game that has been published in there.
Yeah, yeah. But like, the, oh, go ahead, James.
There's a lot more things that I can see through it now.
True.
Yeah. Also, like, this is just my opinion, but because it's only ever 1d4, that means you could be like one image from a standard action, and that's the worst. That is literally the worst. But I actually, now that I'm reading it, I think inoculation is pretty great. Add your operative's edge bonus to fortitude saves against poison and disease. Like, that's your worst save.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually really good. I take it back. There are some good ones in here, but they're niche. Mm-hmm. I also like, but then like, once you get to 6th level, you get like debilitating sniper, trick attack with sniper weapons. Yeah, you get improved quick movement, double the movement speed bonus from quick movement. It's like, great. This is awesome.
I mean, can we just say Bleeding Shot's the best one?
Bleeding Shot is really good. Mostly just because the way bleed works in Starfinder, like, it's just auto kill.
It's brutal.
If you were a crazy person and wanted to be a melee operative, you sure-footed is kind of a necessary one, because everybody who ever tries to sneak around in things that make it easy to sneak around know much how much roguish types hate difficult terrain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just ignoring difficult terrain. I mean, there's a lot of other things that do this too, but being able to stealth wall it while doing it is really, you're right, it's a good one. Mm-hmm. Also, Uncanny Shooter. Make sure you just get slapped around.
Uncanny Shooter is incredibly good. Yeah. Like, it is so good. It's like the type of ability that all of your range characters just wish they had.
I mean, it's the 11th level point blank master feat from Pathfinder. It makes so you don't provoke attacks of opportunity with ranged attacks from your small arms, so it saves your bacon.
Yeah, yeah, but like, Pathfinder's only works on like one weapon that you pick, right?
No. It's just, if I remember, improved whatever that feat is. It works just... Mm-hmm. Whenever using a ranged attack.
In Starfinder, so many more characters use ranged weapons, so that's why it's so valuable.
Can we talk about how awesome, like when you get to 10th level, how awesome these ones are, though? Like, have you seen improved uncanny mobility? Do you know how amazing it is? It's whenever you trick attack, you're allowed to basically move up to your speed. That's part of trick attack. Mm-hmm. And improved uncanny mobility makes it so that when you trick attack, that movement you make does not provoke. Like... You're just like, and like, so you take that and you take the thing that makes you like not provoke when you shoot. And so basically you're just taking this full action where you're doing somersaults, pulling out guns, shooting everybody around you like Reaper from Overwatch, and nobody can stop you. They're just like, that's a mighty fine shotgun you have, Mr. Ah!
The way I like to describe the 10th level set of operative exploits is, have you ever seen Ghost in the Shell? Anything that happens in Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I also am a big fan of versatile movement. Take your land speed, and you have a climb speed and swim speed equal to that now. Enjoy.
Holographic distraction, just throw in an idiot version of yourself somewhere that leads people off your trail. I love it.
Dude, you know that our friend Paul would love that.
He would do it in just like while we were in a bar.
he just want to sit there and drink with all of his holograms. And then, like... There's Cloaking Field, which is basically hide in plain sight. It's great. Except you can use it anywhere because you have a magical cloaky or a techno cloaky thing at your belt. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay. I'm also a big fan of Deactivating Shot, where you can shoot items to make them stop working. I love it. I think the 10th level is just so great. Like, this is all the iconic stuff you wanted your operative to do.
Yeah, and the ghost specialization that we mentioned earlier gets Cloaking Field when they choose Ghost. Yeah. So just hide in plain sight at, what is it, level 1?
Well, like level 5. It's like nothing. Mm-hmm. And then you can go to... Go ahead.
And 14th level is just getting rid of anything that ever felt like a limit. For instance, Cloaking Field can now last 100 rounds.
Enjoy. Multi-attack mastery makes it so that if you're someone who just doesn't feel like trick attacking, and instead you just want to shoot people a billion times in a round, well, you debilitating injure those people if you hit them at least twice in a single full attack. Even if you're not trick attacking, with no skill checks allowed, just take your gun and go pew, 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 pew. And if two of those pews hit, then they're bleeding all over the place because your paramedic took the bleeding shot one.
Also, uncanny senses giving you, you know, blind sense and blind sight, which makes your holograms just, like, not matter nearly as much.
Yeah. Oh, no. And everything gets longer. Your blind set upgrades to blind sight and gets 60 feet, and your dark vision gets bigger by 30 feet. Just nothing can get away from you. You are amazing at this point. Just it's such a strong tier of just useful abilities.
Mm-hmm. And you get to choose, like, at the 14th level, you still have, oh boy, bad at numbers, 16, like, 18, 20.
Like three more, right?
Yeah, you still have room to grow as a person.
It's great. Just get to 20th level and have all the power. You'll be the best. But backtracking a bit to third level, this is when you get the quick movement ability we were talking about, which is, you know, if you're unencumbered and wearing light or no armor, your land speed goes up by 10 feet. At 9th level, it goes up by another 10 feet for a total of 20. And at 15th, your land speed goes up by 30. If you take that ability that gives you, that doubles your quick movement up to a maximum plus 20, then this one ability plus that talent can be worth up to 50 bonus movement speeds. So for most races, you're moving 80 feet around, which is something incredibly crazy, like what? Gosh, I math brain, I can't think of how many squares that is. Help me, friends. 80 divided by 5. That would be 2.
No, this is fun.
16. 16, right? Right? Yeah, it is 16. Okay, good. So you can move 16 squares with one move action. It's amazing. I love it. I love it so much. Take fleet. Move another 2. Mm-hmm. Go beyond. Plus ultra.
Before we continue down the class features list, this is a good time to mention that we record these episodes live in front of a Twitch audience. So if you're in our audience right now and you have any questions for us, please go ahead and ask those questions for us right away, and we will answer them throughout the episode as we are able.
Best we can.
But we'll answer them. It'll be terrible.
I mean, if I only have terrible answers, that's all I'm given.
At third level, you also get weapon specialization like every other class in the game, which gives you bonus damage to the stuff the class gave you proficiency with. And the operative is not incentivized into expanding its weapon ranges very often.
No. It's kind of sad because weapon specialization only adds half your level to the weapons the operative uses unless you go sniper. So, like, if you take a sniper weapon and you're making like that one shot around, you could take the ability to trick attack with it for bonus damage, but or not for bonus damage, for applying the debilitating injury, but you can never actually deal the bonus damage for it because theoretically sniper weapons have more base damage anyway to make up for it. But for the most part, since small arms and operative weapons are what you're using and those add half your level via weapon specialization, you kind of don't get as much bang for your buck out of it, but you get it for free, so who cares?
Yeah, and just make people bleed from really far.
Yeah, it's great. Just bleed them. It's just that's what they wanted, right? That's what they came to you for. That's your job. You have to do it, James. It's your employment.
Well, I mean, also, like, as in contrast to Pathfinder's, like, sneak attack, which actually had a range to it, trick attack doesn't.
Yeah, just be 1,000 feet away with your sniper rifle and trick attack them. And also, like, the thing only stops the bonus damage. It doesn't stop them from being flat footed. So you're 100 feet away, they're flat footed, and you're shooting them with a sniper rifle.
I always like to view it as like you're 12 blocks away, and you're assuming, and you just got like a little laser pointer in your other hand, and you just wiggle it at their eyes, and that is enough to get the bonus damage.
Right. No, you're doing sick flicks from acrobatics 1,000 feet away, and it's enough. It's enough. They can't see where the laser is going to be with all your moving. It's great.
I mean, it really does underplay, like, the sniper game where somebody's working a lot to create diversions and distraction, and then somebody's just Cirque du Soleil-ing on a hill.
No, you're using athletics. You're bench-pressing your sniper gun and pressing it up. That's
good. I mean, if you were doing a pole dance with a sniper gun, nobody would have expected you to shoot somebody.
No.
So speaking about things people don't suspect, debilitating trick is the next ability. And so that is essentially debilitating injury from the Unchained Rogue in Pathfinder. When you hit someone with a trick attack, you can either choose to make them flat-footed or off-target until the beginning of your next turn. And numerous different exploits add other options that you can do to them instead of those. So flat-footed is minus 2 to their AC. A target is -2 to their attack rolls. You can also add things like stunning, where they have to make a fortitude save or get stunned. Bleeding, where they just get the bleeding condition for oodles of damage and die out because most creatures aren't going to have a way to heal themselves.
It's like a dinosaur. 15 medicine check. It's brutal.
Yeah, stupid dinosaur.
That dinosaur was high and scared.
That dinosaur deserved the pain I inflicted upon it. Anyway, there's lots of cool things you can do, and it sort of helps the operative take this really nasty debuff route. And like we mentioned, the way that the math works, because it's a really linear DC, it's 20 plus the CR of the thing you're trying to shoot, that check actually gets easier as like your ability scores go up, as you get more ranks, as that insight bonus from operative edge is increasing. It's actually getting easier to trick attack people as you get higher, and eventually you can hit it easy on like a 10. Now, I don't think you could take 10 on it, because you typically can't take 10 on something that has a penalty for failing, like not getting all those sweet benefits, but a 50-50 shot is pretty great.
Let's go down the other features before we get into like theories about how all that stuff works. We still have uncanny agility. When you're immune at 7th level, you gain it. You're immune to the Thoughtful condition, and your opponent doesn't get any bonuses to attack rolls against you from flanking or attacking while you're prone. So you can just Jackie Chan it and fight from the ground. Pick up chairs. They're operative weapons, I'm sure.
But you're missing the strangest, most esoteric part of that ability. Mm-hmm. Covering fire and harrying fire don't do anything to you.
If
you
have Jackie Chan.
Yeah, it's great.
The chair protects.
People can't gang up on you. And it doesn't have, like, the if they're 4 levels higher than you thing that, like, Pathfinder had. I don't know about you, but in all, like, I played a Blood Rager to, like, 12th level, and I never ran into a situation where, like, there was a rogue who was 4 levels higher than me sneak attacking me, and mm-hmm. as a rogue, I never ran into a situation where an enemy had uncanny dodge, and I improved uncanny dodge, and I had a reasonable chance to like overcome that anyway. So I'm kind of glad that they just got rid of that, and we're like, yo, no, you're just immune.
I don't
get my hopes up.
I think you would run into that if you're a rogue playing up against a barbarian.
Yes,
because generally they overleveled them for encounters.
Mm. Yes. But no, also, I like that the fact that it doesn't get my hopes up by saying you might be able to overcome this, because then I got to ask the GM, well, what's his effective barbarian level, Robin? And she's going to go, too high for it to matter, just like this, because this is what Robin does.
I mean, also, you found ways to circumvent that, because I have that ability in a game we run, and, you know.
No, the answer is paralysis. That's the answer. Yeah. Paralysis.
That works pretty well. Even with my bonuses against paralysis.
Dodge this!
And then we have triple attack at 8th. When making full attacks using only melee weapons with the operative special weapons property or small arms, you can make 3 attacks instead of 2.
That's something to talk about mathematically, because it's a very interesting choice for the operative. But one ability that we skipped by accident at an earlier level, it's at 7th level. You get specialization skill mastery. So like what happens is that at 7th level, the insight bonus that you get from getting free... So I think we might have forgot to mention this, but in addition to getting free ranks in your specialization skills, you also get free skill focus in that skill. Mm. And that gives you a +3 insight bonus. So... up until 7th level, the insight bonus from your rogue class feature actually doesn't matter when determining the bonus that you get to your specialization skills, because that's going to be a 3. You'd get a 1 from your class. The 3 is higher, and they don't stack. When you get specialization skill mastery, that's the point where the class feature and the feat, like the feat gets overwritten effectively, because the class feature is higher or equal. So specialization skill mastery basically changes what skill focus does. When you attempt a skill check in a skill that you have skill focus with, you can take 10 even if stresses or distractions would normally prevent you from doing so. That applies if you later take skill focus as a regular feat, but in terms of like the now, its primary function is to make sure that that feat still does something and isn't just written into obsolescence by the operative's edge class feature. It's really cool and it's helpful, and I personally think that it's pretty good design.
This is also the point in which your trick attacks are going to get to the point that taking 10 on them is an intelligent option against lower level mm-hmm. mooks. where you'll basically a 10 will be more than enough to overcome the average CR of the lower level creatures you're fighting. So that becomes immediately effective in combat.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jebediah, I'm just going to take 10 on my there check, so I always shoot Billy Bob. It's going to be great.
Oh, Billy Bob.
Oh, Billy Bob, no.
It's too much damage, Billy Bob.
Too much damage. Hey, do you want to talk about really too much damage? James, what do we get at 13th level?
At 13th level, we get quad attack, which is like triple attack at 8th, except you add another attack, so you make 4 attacks instead of 2 on a full attack.
Look at those great useful prefixes telling us exactly what the class feature does.
I mean, it's good. It's right to the point. It's named aptly, just like operative weapons. You don't want confusion. You don't want a huge table with conditions and stuff like that. You just want to know what it is.
No, you just want to shoot them a bunch of times. And just in case the class features didn't tell you what they did even more, the next new class feature you get is at 17th level, mm-hmm. when you get double debilitation. You put 2 penalties with debilitating trick.
And we need
it's
to,
right there.
And we need to pause here because the operative probably got very confused at 13th level and then not getting a new awesome ability for 4 more levels. I mean, the operative has been getting multiple awesome abilities every single level, and then there's just this giant gap in the class.
Yeah, but look at 15th level on the table. Your operative's edge goes from 4 to 5, so you get an extra +1 to initiative and on all skills. Quick movement goes up by 10 feet from 20 to 30. Trick attack goes from 7d8 to 8d8. Like, you're getting stuff. It's just not new stuff. And you don't need more new stuff until 7th level, when the only thing you would have had is another d8 on trick attack.
I'm just saying, it goes against the design imperative where they said that numbers going up wasn't enough to count as something cool.
I mean, I look forward to getting 10 extra feet of movement from quick movement. I think that's really cool.
No, it's like Wizardy from the first Pathfinder that had that issue. But at least 15th is a feat level, and also it would be a ability increase level.
Mm-hmm. That's
true. But that's still numbers going up.
Yes. I mean, I really like 10 extra feet of movement. That is enough to make me happy. But then again, my operative is completely movement-based, so I understand that's not for everybody.
And honestly, I can't argue that the operative hasn't gotten enough good things.
Yeah, you're done, operative. You get nothing more until 20th level when you get supreme operative. Enjoy it. Param, do you want to close it out?
Okay, the supreme operative ability.
The supreme operative.
You attempt a skill check with your specialization's associated skills, you may roll twice and take the higher result. Once per day, as a move action, you can temporarily trade out one of your operative exploits for another operative exploit of the same level or lower. This trade lasts for 24 hours. If the exploit you traded away is a prerequisite for any other abilities, you lose all abilities that require as a prerequisite for the duration.
So it's like a martial focus or martial expertise. No, the brawler class feature.
And this is when the operative becomes Batman.
Yes, they're great. They are a very effective Batman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great because you could just take away your proficiency with something, say you're bad at it, and then get it back later. Mm-hmm. Just to trick people.
Yeah, it's great. Isn't that what Batman does? He pretends to be bad for the first 2 acts so he can look amazing in act 3.
Uh-huh, I do know how to use this Batarang.
It's great. No, I'm a big fan. Mm-hmm. So when you guys build... Actually, before we talk about operative builds, I'm gonna step up here on this, this platform for a minute and say something I really think about the operative. And when you compare it to some of Starfinder's other classes, there is definitely a design philosophy where, like, you should always be getting something at every level, right? That's what James was mentioning. And the operative really does get something, but, like, where other classes fail is that for the operative, you're always getting something that feels like it matters and that it is relevant to your playstyle. Like, I think that when you look at some of the other classes, like the Envoy does not have this problem. The Envoy is super customizable to exactly what kind of Envoy you want to be. But when you look at things like definitely the mechanic, someone in chat mentioned how the Technomancer gets a lot of dead levels, and I think that kind of contributes to this problem as well, even though you get lots of spells and stuff to pick from. And even the Solarian kind of has this problem where, like, there isn't a lot of choice for the simple fact that some options are clearly better than others. The Operative just has a giant kit full of lots of cool, unique abilities that make you feel like you're getting something fun every level and that it's really customizable. And more importantly, it's really easy to picture how this works on the battlefield. If you're somebody who's familiar with 3.5 or Pathfinder, reading any of these Operative class features is really easy to picture how and why it would be good. Whereas the benefits of being really good at computers is something that someone who's not familiar with Starfinder wouldn't be too familiar with. Or if you're not thinking about how all of these Operative improvisations work together and like fit in a like round by round level, because these are all completely new abilities and a completely new way to play the game, it's hard to picture what that would look like. But the Operative is really easy to picture. And I think that when a lot of people confuse power for that ease of use, if that makes sense.
I mean, versatility does feel powerful.
It does. The Operative is really good at a lot of things. I would say that the Operative has a tough time specializing beyond what other people can do.
The Operative has a tough time because it gets the equivalent of specializing in what every other person does.
Yeah. So, and I mean, I think that that's a challenge that Starfinder's skill system has in general. I think that everybody has lots of skill points, and at the same time, the number of skills in the game were condensed so that players rub up against each other in ways that don't happen in Pathfinder First Edition and even in Pathfinder Playtest right now. Mm-hmm. Like, if you go and you're on a mission and you need somebody to hack the computer, well, you're playing in a sci-fi setting, and everybody is going to think that computers are important for their character, so you're probably going to have somewhere between 2 to 3 of your 4 people having the ability to do stuff to computers or, like, engineering or whatever. And I think that the Operative isn't mathematically better at using any skills, and most of its abilities are combat-based rather than making your skills better. So I think that it doesn't really pull ahead in skills, aside from the fact that it's just good at all of them generally.
Now, I'm going to put the brakes on that right here. The Operative is good or best at every single possible skill rank, has specializations that make it even above and beyond there, to where it is a better engineer than the engineer, and a better mechanic than the mechanic, it can be a better hacker than the technomancer, and it can basically outdo any other skill except the sciences that any of the other classes bring. So basically only the Mystic is safe from the Operative dominating their playstyle. And at the same time that it is the best at every single skill point and has reasons to take intelligence as one of its secondary stats and has enough skill points that doesn't matter because it can basically take the entire skill list anytime it wants to and keep it. It is also able to do top damage per round, tying it with the Solarian and the Soldier, on top of all of its other goodness, and it gets to act like James Bond and use all of those cool abilities. It basically gets everything it could ever want and is penalized for none of it.
I don't agree with you there. Here's why I don't agree. I'm actually really interested to hear what James thinks, though. But the reason I don't agree with you is that when you're sitting down to play an Operative, like in terms of damage, you don't have the numbers to be consistent compared to like a Soldier or a Solarian. A Soldier and a Solarian is adding a flat bonus and they're regularly hitting high numbers. Whereas a Operative might get lucky and roll a bunch of 8s and do like top tier damage. But even at that top tier, it's not significantly higher than what a Soldier would be doing. It's not like when you're playing a Rogue and you roll your 5d6 and you roll hundreds of damage more, because you're limited in the number of attacks you can do for one. And, you know, you're still at 3/3 BAB with your opponent is getting a -2, sure, but you're not really consistently hitting those high numbers in terms of the damage numbers.
That's not how math works, Alex. There is math solutions for random numbers. You take the look at the average, and all of the Operative's damage is based off of large number of rolled dice, which means it has a massive bell curve and will hit that average almost every time. The fact that the Operative ever spikes low is rare, and the fact that the Operative ever spikes high as well. But when you look at its just average expected damage per round, it is right a couple of points under The max optimized Solarian and the max optimized Soldier. We're talking about 2 or 3 points of damage average when compared to hundreds per round. It's not the law of averages will not make it spike high or low any significant amount of time, and the other classes do so on big hits, not little hits.
But yes, you're right. The law of averages should play out that way, but I have met enough people who roll enough dice consistently low to know that like that the law of averages means nothing when you get into actual play. And so, yes, it is balanced around that damage. It absolutely is. But it's very rarely going to spike above that. Like you just said, over a long period of time, it's going to be average. And in the meantime, you're going to have rounds where you feel like you're hitting really low because you're rolling 2s, 3s, and 4s. And if that's a critical roll where you need to beat the boss monster now before he beheads Princess Peach or whatever, like, you're going to feel it in that moment. On top of that, when we look at the operative has tons of skills. It's true. But in general, Starfinder's list of skills that are, quote, required, unquote, is much lower than Pathfinder. Everything is consolidated to the point where, like, the fact that the operative is good at everything is eventually just going to be bumping into everybody else's shoes, especially if you're playing with somebody who puts more emphasis into a given ability score than the operative. Like, for example, if you're playing a mechanic and you give yourself a higher intelligence than the operative it has, and you take that exocortex ability that gives you a free skill focus, you can really easily beat him in engineering. Granted, that's probably the only skill you're going to beat him in, but being good at a general large array of skills is the operative shtick, where the mechanic shtick is being better than the operative at a very small, low number of skills. Whether or not the mechanic actually achieves that goal is mostly in the realm of comparing operative exploits to mechanic tricks, though. That doesn't really come from the math. That comes from the practical abilities. In terms of raw number rolling, the mechanic can beat the operative in raw numbers. The same thing goes for the envoy. Operatives aren't going to pump their charisma the way that an envoy will. And because of that, you're going to see the envoy regularly outperforming the operative at social-based skills, especially when they get lucky by the law of averages. Their average on the inspiration die equals or exceeds skill focus at low levels, and depending on whether you want to round up or round down. And on top of that, as you get higher up, you get continual flat +1 bonuses to your inspiration roll to increase the value of that average to the point where, on average, it equals about the operative's edge bonus. So, yes, the operative is very strong, but to say that it absolutely eclipses the other skill-based classes just isn't true. And very clearly, fighting isn't in the toolkit niche of the envoy. The envoy doesn't need to be good at fighting because the envoy's job is to make everybody else better at fighting. Again, I think the big area of contestants is when you compare the operative to the mechanic. And I have already said that I feel like the mechanic is lacking in that comparison. I will not go into it again because I rant for, like, I don't remember how many minutes in the mechanic episode, but I do it. And
60.
It's a long time. You guys have to peel me away from it, kicking and screaming. I remember this. But no, I think the operative is an excellent class, but I do not think that it is significantly overpowered. It might be a little too good for what it gets, but I don't think that it's significantly better than, especially like at combat. Like, after playing a soldier for as long as I have in Dead Sons, no way. I barbecue things. Our party Mystic gets disgusted every time I roll a damage die. You've heard Tom going, ugh.
Like, yeah. Go ahead, Prem. Do you have a rebuttal to that?
I mean, the operative is absolutely overpowered because it compromises on nothing. The only thing that a soldier... This game is about combat, skill, and social encounters, and then roleplay. There's also starships, and nobody gets an edge at starships. And if...
What?
Everybody can invest in skills, and they eliminate most class abilities.
Mechanics get an edge in starships. They actually just made a mechanic exploit, or a mechanic trick in armory.
Yeah, it took armory to make one class good at starships. So everybody else... And the operative is great at combat and can DPR within 2 or 3 points of the best boys. The only thing it passes on is it has less hit points than a soldier does and a Solarian does, but it also counteracts that by having higher AC, or at least equal AC, to those classes when compared to them. So it, the only advantage that the pure combat classes have over it is in durability. In skill encounters, it can absolutely hold its own and dominate at any given one it chooses to focus in, and usually two or three secondary focuses, because even if you were a mechanic, took the exocortex to make your skill better, and were pumping up intelligence like crazy, in Starfinder, you have two maxed ability scores, your primary ability score and one other, and the operative has got a good, is going to choose between charisma or intelligence. So if they picked intelligence, then the mechanic is only ever going to have a 1-point advantage over the operative if the operative chooses to let him have it.
Yeah. It's hard, because as far, like, when I look at an operative, I look at a band-aid as a party member, because you're dealing with a group that you're playing with. You have people that are specialized in areas, and the operative can help smooth over where you don't have somebody. Their raw numbers might eclipse other characters, but they don't have the riders to make them super effective in the same roles. For instance, mechanics just being able to go, oh, crap, didn't mean to flip that switch. Let's not flip that switch when I fail that check. With combat, they can, once again, fill in the gap if you're missing damage. If they're your only source, their lack of versatility in weapons holds them back because they don't have the ways to fight in other fields that they might not have prepared for ahead of time. And they are streaky. With the law of averages is great. Guarantees are always better. Mm-hmm. They're a great addition to any party. They are the peanut butter over your marshmallow or jelly sandwich. They just make everything a little bit better. They're a good class.
I agree with that. I agree with that assessment. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because it largely supports what I said.
No, I mean, numerically, they're going to be competitive in everything. It's just, if Starfinder was just a game where you rolled numbers and you won or lost, that would be it. There wouldn't be much room to discuss, but because there's riders that change the effects of those numbers, because there are some other conditions, having ability to affect those riders can mean more than raw skill.
I also think it's worth pointing out that the operative can maintain pace with a ranged soldier. Honestly, it really can't maintain pace with a Solarian using a Solarian weapon or a soldier using a melee weapon, because those classes have class features that provide additional damage on top of what they would normally get, so the operative falls behind. Also, the operative's big weakness of I have 6 hit points and I'm wearing light armor really rears its ugly head when you are in melee range like that. And whereas the Solarian weapon soldier can take heavy armor proficiency with no penalties whatsoever and go into armor into melee just fine, the operative's class features start turning off if it's wearing that armor, and its dexterity bonus actually like makes its saving throws more lopsided. Personally, I disagree with you when you say that everybody has 2 maxed ability scores. I have never seen a character that can afford that, because you only get those 10 basic points and then like an average of 2 from your race and 1 from your theme. So even if you go and you buy that extra personal upgrade, you're not going to have 2 maxed. You're pretty much going to have 1 that's maxed and then 1 that's pretty close. So if you do the max dex, which you probably should because it's your key ability score, and max intelligence, then you're suffering in charisma, which means that you're not better at social skills than an envoy would be. And if you are switching that around and being better at charisma, then you have much fewer skill ranks and you're not better at all of those intelligence things than a mechanic or a technomancer would be. So I think that it's easy to say that you could build an operative to be better than, or to be equivalent to or better than those classes at skills, but it can't do them all at the same time just because of how ability scores work.
Yeah, and you have to have a locked-in character when you start the game. It's kind of like being a wizard.
Yeah. I personally think the operative is the most versatile of the classes, and that's why we're having this conversation. Yeah. And just because you theoretically could doesn't mean you'll be able to do it all in one setting.
But I'm sure Param's operative is a cool cat who doesn't afraid of anything.
Mine's a cool brat who does 6 flips. No, I need to buy a Tailblade, though, for serious.
Oh, yeah, those came out.
Yeah, they did. I think they're legal, too. So, wait, what do people in chat think about Param and my big argument and James's mediation? I don't see anything yet.
No.
Do you guys have thoughts?
No, they were talking about my squishy pig that I have as a new desktop buddy, and then they keep talking about your third-party stuff.
It's great. No, keep talking about my third-party stuff, guys. I wrote tons of operative things.
Alex will never pay you to pump for him, so don't even try.
No, I am perfectly capable of pumping up my own stuff. It's great. And yeah, it's thank you, Harold, for doing such a great job telling people about all the things I've written in chat. Mm-hmm. It's excellent.
Okay, we got a comment from Milo V3 that says that they think the operative is overtuned to a degree.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways it can be, and you don't want to mistake potential for actual table use. You have all that variability, but you can only make one character at a time.
So what do you think? If they took the D8s and nerfed them to D6s, would that bring the operative better in line?
No, what they needed to do is not have... I think that the problem is the 10-plus int skill bonuses and giving you a bonus to every skill at once. If they just made it pick a few skills and you'll get that bonus to it, or limited the number of skills you got a little bit more, then the operative really would have a lot more choice involved of, okay, I'm going to be really good at these things and not good at these things. But right now it's really easy for an operative to be like, the ultimate decision is, are you going to step on the charisma person's toes or the intelligence person's toes? But you're going to be stepping on one of their toes.
Yeah.
Well, I think an equally pertinent question is, what does your party comp look like? Like, it's really easy for an operative to step on people's toes in Pathfinder Society, because you never know what you're going to be sitting down at the table and getting. You know, James and I have been at tables where we've had 7 people, and it's like, well, yes, we are going to be overlapping everybody. I'm sorry. There's not enough skills for the 7 of us.
But, yeah, usually your best person at that point just says, I'll clean up the mess if y'all mess it up.
Yeah. I do think that is an issue with the system. And like I said, I think that in general, they probably should have tuned the number of skills back for everybody a little bit to make up for the fact they did such heavily consolation. But I think for what we have, the operative isn't like, it's not a class that's going to break your game in terms of its power. And I think that if you have a responsible group of players who builds their group well, it's not going to cause too much drama at the table, especially if your operative player is willing to be like, okay, I don't need to roll every skill check. I think that's an important...
So the operative is like the wizard. It's on their responsibility to not Gandalf the whole thing up and be the answer to every question and let other people have spotlight time.
I'm sorry, Param. It was up to another human being at another table to be nice to other human beings that want to play a game.
Agreed. I totally agree. Yes, I think that the design could have been a little bit better so that wasn't something that could happen. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, when you have a group of people sitting at a table, it's part of the social contract that each other's play style doesn't ruin the experience for anybody else.
Right.
That is my personal belief when it comes to role-playing games, at least. It's why, even though I have built in stupid builds on Iconic Design, you usually don't see me using the really stupid ones. what was the one I did that I showed you and you were like, you're awful, why did you make this? Do you remember that one?
That's not, doesn't narrow it down much.
It doesn't. Do you remember the one I did that could make 11 attacks of opportunity per round with Shuriken?
Yeah, that's a good one. Don't do that again, please.
I've heard people try to use that one. It's really funny to read because sometimes it's great and then other times, like, you're taking -12 to attack rolls. So you're just like, oh, I can't hit anything with my face.
It's Cryptwalker agrees, operative equals skill wizard.
Oh, totally, yeah.
No.
I think if anyone is closest to the wizard in terms of raw, I can mess up your gameness, it's definitely the operative. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mess it up for the GM, it messes it up for... Oh man, you know, I just saw that clip of me pretending to throw shuriken arrows, and I do not look like I'm throwing shuriken.
No, you look kind of like you're having a really slow stroke.
I'm so sorry. No. I didn't mean to look like I was having a stroke.
Right.
I was trying to like... I did it again. I just saw myself on the camera. No, I'm done. No. I'm done. No more shuriken for this.
Sit on your hands, Mr. Agunis. Yeah. Do you have any final thoughts about the operative?
I love my operative. My operative is fun. I do all the flips.
Well, one of the best things about the operative is that you can use that class to build so many types of sci-fi characters. You can build a combat-focused character themes. You can build skills. You can everything from secret agents to street thief to Han Solo to the ace pilot. The operative just fits right into and covers so much ground. And I think that is a lot of why the class is so broad, because it had to fill so many different classic archetypes in science fiction.
Definitely.
And it does it, and it does the job well. And thanks to Starfinder's balance, even the problems it has wouldn't be as exacerbated as the same problems would have been in, say, 3.5 or Pathfinder.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Despite all this back and forth, it's a good class that works well with everything, and the math is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm such a weirdo, because like so many people are like, oh, you can have all the skills and do everything, and I'm just like, I want to take all the mobility options and I want to be unstoppable at moving. It's so much fun. You could just be like, I'm gonna move there, and then I'm gonna do zigzags around the field, and not gonna provoke, and you can't do anything about it, and I'm gonna shoot you while I do it.
Because skill rolls are fun because they're instant gratification, but they're just, it's like putting a quarter in a gumball machine. Yeah, I got the gumball. Oh, I have a gumball, instead of, you know, having the ability to move to a different gumball machine.
No, I'm going to move to all the gumball machines, put my quarter in none of them, and then shoot somebody who expected me to.
That's going
to
land you in prison real quick.
Listen, this is Starfinder. Everything should land us in prison really quick.
All right.
Everything should land us in prison.
You're all horrific murder hobos in space, and you all deserve to be rotting away in the space asteroid prison.
Mitsuko Hane's never murdered anybody.
I know, you're the only one. They're going to assume that she was taken captive and, you know, was, like, totally not involved in this adventure.
I do. So, right before we wrap up, I spent my first big money purchase. I spent 8,000 credits to buy a tour bus. If that doesn't tell you what the vehicle was made society legal, so the last time we went to a planet, we all took my bus. And you used it for cover.
So question.
Yes.
Did you put the bus on a shuttle and shuttle the bus to a planet? Or is the bus literally capable of flying through space?
No. We put it in the cargo hold of the Pegasus, and then we drove it to our destination.
Do you drive your own bus, or did you make one of them drive for you?
Oh, no. I drive my tour bus.
Do you have ranks in piloting?
Yeah. I'm an onboard.
Wow.
Yeah, it's one of the things. I have like all these skills. I don't lord it over anybody. I'm almost as good as engineering as like the engineers in our party.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
Yeah, that's really great. I just let them have it.
Okay. Well,
hey, they give me diplomacy and the pop star checks. Sorry, go ahead, Param.
Well, that's going to wrap us up for another episode of No Direction Beyond. We hope you've enjoyed it. We would like to thank our Patreon supporters for making this show and other shows like it possible. If you wish to support this show and help us continue to do what we do, you can support us at patreon.com/nodirection. You can go to our website, nodirectionpodcast.com, to find the link there, where you will also find the link to the most chill Paizo-oriented chat room on Discord, the No Direction Discord server. We would love to have you there. You can talk with most of the staff just about any time you want, and we're always in there, and other fans are in there chatting it up, and it is a fantastic chill community that is mostly drama-free, which is becoming a rarity in the Paizo-oriented communities lately.
The biggest drama is the anime channel, where we talk about how drama-rific Dororo is.
We haven't gotten to there yet, but there is a great Cory in the House opening synopsis.
Oh, man, that video is a treasure. The world is a better place because it is in it.
No, but then if you come to our Discord, you can watch Param play out with all of his Meower Horn and all of I need a fun name for the iron-blooded orphans as rats. It doesn't matter. They're iron-blooded orphans, but they're mice, and it's hilarious.
It is wonderful. I had to import those suckers from Japan. It took 6 months, but it was worth it.
Cool. Yeah. Param imports all sorts of great stuff from Japan, and he has all the best toys. You should watch him build his Gunpla. Also, you should watch him play Kingmaker.
Yes. I am doing a playthrough of Kingmaker, and I figured might as well be content. So whenever I start up Kingmaker, it will be live streamed on Twitch. You can join me and help me fumble through the stolen lands and hope that I make it through the other side. It is a surprisingly difficult game, even on easy. As well as we have several other podcasts on the network and some fantastic blogs, including several written by my two wonderful co-hosts here. Go check those out at nodirectionpodcast.com.
Indeed. Also, should we tell them about the really cool, exciting thing we're going to get to do for our next episode of No Direction Beyond? I kind of want to. Can we please?
What are please, we? Great. What are we doing?
Can we tell them about the topic?
We should say that we're going to be doing a topic soon.
No, we should tell them. It's okay. Great. I'm so excited.
But we haven't picked a planet yet.
That's fine. Okay. No, it's not that one. The other one.
The other one?
Yeah, the other one.
I don't know what the other one is, so I can't greenlight it live on air.
How do you not remember? It's the one that we were asked to do. Remember?
Oh, yes! Derp! We're going to be reviewing Alien Archive 2, hopefully, if the stars all align, during your next No Direction Beyond episode.
Yes, I'm so excited. This is going to be another great episode where I sit in the corner and bounce up and down while they read things I wrote.
See, I thought you were talking about the planets. Like, we haven't picked the planet yet. We don't know if we're going to do that feature.
Yeah, so what Param is talking about is that we're trying to figure out how to do a recurring feature that was kind of like Legend Lore that Anthony Lee and I used to do on Private Sanctuary, where we'll, like, pick a planet and we'll talk cool stuff about it. We're still discussing that, and that won't be until after the Alien Archive episode. So congratulations, you got two plans spoiled for you.
And that assumes that we don't get any more awesome guests, because we do also like to have guests on the interview part of the podcast.
We do. Hey, if you're somebody like, you know, Thurston Hillman or Owen Casey Stevens or Jason Keeley, and you really want to be on the show, maybe because you want to preview the new corruption rules that I'm pretty sure are going to be coming out in the Signal of Screams adventure.
Alex, we don't have to beg them on air. We can get guests when we want them, because Pazzo is an amazing company.
I'm gonna slyly plant the seeds of podcast them in their heads live on No Direction Beyond. It's great. You should totally come on to our shows, guys.
Yeah, we also do a series of Let's Plays, actual plays, including No Direction Adventurous and the No Direction Dooms play, where we've been playtesting Pathfinder 2nd Edition, and that includes both of the co-hosts. Basically, everybody on this show is in that show, too. So if you like us and how we give each other a hard time, you will enjoy that podcast.
Oh, yeah, no, you'll love it. It's great, because Lauren did nothing but bother my paladin in the first one, so my sorcerer did nothing but bother her druid in the second one. She was fairly annoyed with me by the end. I did my job well.
I thought your sorcerer, all it contributed to was dying horrifically repeatedly.
I cast tons of great spells and knock things out.
Right. Combat effective and also squishy.
I was a sorcerer. What do you want?
I mean, my monk was sturdy.
I want to point out that I didn't die. I ran to a rock and stood atop it after I got healed and said, "I cannot be touched. I am on top of a rock fighting an earth."
Should have been a wizard. Would have been smarter than that.
Hey, I ended up tanking the main boss as a rogue with a knife. So it went in bad places.
No, you did everything right. Good job.
Yeah, he's got to live it out.
If James was there, he would have approved.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, so please check out our other content, and we will be back in a couple of weeks as No Direction Beyond. And also next week, we're going to be having a episode of No Direction Normal? Vanilla?
Prime.
Classic? Prime?
No Direction More Than Meets the Eye.
Indeed. We'll be having another episode in the direction next week, so please join us there, and lots of content besides. So, until next time, go beyond with No Direction.